Welcome to the Cloud Pod, where the forecast is always cloudy. We talk weekly about all things AWS, GCP, and Azure. We are your hosts,
Justin,
Jonathan,
Ryan,
and Peter.
Episode 189, recorded for the week of November 16th, 2022. The Cloud Pod celebrates AWS becoming a new Time Lord. Good evening, Ryan and Peter.
Hello.
Hola.
Hola. We are just a few weeks away from reInvent, so it is time to start talking about all things reInvent. But first, we have to clear out the news, and then we will have a special episode we'll record right after this one, which will be in your feed, to talk about all of our predictions and the news leading up to that, so we can take Thanksgiving off, so that'd be nice. But the most important thing is that if you are not going to be at the conference, we will be live streaming over top of the keynotes, the Monday night keynote and the Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday keynotes, I believe, if I recall the schedule correctly. Basically, all the big ones except for the partner keynote, we will be live streaming and mocking in real time. At least Jonathan and Ryan and I will be. Peter is going to be on site.
I am.
So if you're looking for CloudPod stickers or anything fun like that, reach out to Peter. He'll be there to give you all your stickers and all your good merch, or sell you Foghorn, whatever you prefer. You know, whatever you need, Peter can provide it for you, and that fantastic DevOps capabilities his team has for you. So we are very excited to not be going, other than Peter, and our wives are happier about it that we're not going either. So
my wife is unhappy that I'm going.
Yeah, as you should be, as you should be. Yeah. So that's the plan. If you are staying at home and not going to the show and you want to be entertained by Ryan, Jonathan, and I, or bored to death, I don't want to, you can join our live stream. You'll be able to follow us on Twitter, if Twitter still exists by that point, because things aren't going so well. But we'll also have a blog post on the website in case Twitter goes down. And of course, you can always follow us on our Slack team. We will be posting the details on the live streams there as well. So check those out. Let's get to the news. First up, AWS is announcing Amazon ECS Task Scale and Protection, which is a new capability that gives customers control over protecting Amazon ECS tasks from being terminated by scale and events from Amazon ECS service auto-scaling or new deployments. Customers can simply mark their mission-critical tasks as protected from scale and events using a new Amazon ECS agent endpoint or using a new API. Customers have indicated they have applications that require mechanisms to safeguard tasks during times of low utilization, and for instance, queue processing async applications such as video transcoding jobs where some tasks may be running for hours even when cumulative service utilization is very low. You can do this in a couple different ways. First is that ECS agent endpoint. So from inside the container, you can call the endpoint and basically enable the protection enabled flag, and then ECS will no longer scale down your container unless your admin's really mad and forces it to be killed in the console or the CLI. And then Amazon ECS API, just a simple API call. And you can actually use these in combination with each other. So if you have the task start the process, but you have another watcher task that watches the processes, and when they complete, wants to kill it, you can combine both methods to either enable or disable, giving you lots of flexibility and power.
It's funny because I hated the first half of this announcement and then got really excited when they started talking about like how to use the introspection or the internal APIs for ECS to do this, because then you can see sort of how you'd use this for managing workloads and you know, basically stating that you're in process of doing something, and so you can have multiple ways to sort of evaluate the health and availability of your service, which is pretty good. Otherwise, I'd just say, like, you know, minimum task levels and scaling settings should be sufficient. So I was a little confused at first, but I like it.
I think a lot of these features are like that. If you didn't experience the edge case, then you don't really understand the feature. And there's probably enough people who experience the edge case where they prioritize this feature.
I mean, I don't think it's necessarily an edge case. I could definitely see if you want to be really aggressive on your auto scaling policies, this is something you probably want to do, and you want to be able to protect working processes and batch operations. I could see the value. I was surprised you had hate for it at first, but I appreciate that you came around on it.
Yeah.
It's just being really aggressive. Yeah, be really aggressive with your scaling policies and then reverse the aggressiveness with conservatism on protecting mm-hmm. things.
Yep, that's true. Well, Amazon TimeSync is now available over the internet as a public NTP service. For those of you who are unhappy with the reliability of NIST NTP time servers, you can set up all your hosts to use Amazon Time. Amazon Time, of course, cares only about Black Friday, which is coming up very quickly as well. This is built available to you all over the internet via UTC Global Standard Synchronization. It's all built up at Amazon's network using redundant satellite-connected atomic reference clocks in the AWS region, and you can find it at time.aws.com. And I can see this being valuable if you're using EKS on-prem or other use cases where you're trying to do more hybrid things and you want to synchronize those clocks for log synchronization. This is a nice benefit if you're trying to be all in on AWS.
I mean, how much jitter do you think there is between NIST and AWS? Like, I'd be surprised.
But I would be surprised too.
Yeah. But, you know.
Or does AWS now have to be complicit in whatever conspiracy theory NIST is up to with their time servers?
There's a guy shows up at the back of the data center and go like, hey, that atomic clock, you gotta knock it back a few milliseconds.
It'd be a shame if something were to happen for these, you know, this period, this precious amount of time.
Yeah. Well, unlike my Mac work laptop, you can now upgrade to macOS Ventura on Amazon EC2 Mac instances. That's, of course, the 13.0 version of macOS. Ventura's latest release from Apple introduces multiple new capabilities and performance improvements over prior macOS versions. macOS Ventura supports Xcode 14 and later, which includes the latest SDKs for iOS, iPadOS, macOS, tvOS, and watchOS. These are all available to you via AMIs and support all of the AMI magic from EVS volumes. The AMIs do include the AWS CLI, the command line tools for Xcode, Amazon SSM agent, and Homebrew installed for those of you who like to do the homebrewing. So awesome. Tap is available to you.
But what if you like that little notification that comes up and says, would you like to update your install? Like, you know, it's like feeling like I have a friend.
Yeah. I hate the little red dot on my work laptop, though. Like, I just want you to go away. I want you to go away. I can't make you go away. All right, you're just going to sit there until IT approves that I can upgrade my work laptop.
So. It does cause me anxiety.
What is going to break is the question.
I mean, we use all SaaS apps, so I'm not really sure. But every time it happens, so you go with the flow.
So just hopefully the browser doesn't break.
Yeah, hopefully.
Yeah, it'll be the security software, right?
Yeah. Oh my god! Yeah. Before you can share your screen, please restart. Yep. Change your security setting and restart. Like,
yeah, terrible. Well, if you were excited about GP3 when it got announced 2 years ago, for all your EC2 workloads, and you were like, "Wow, I really like to use that new GP3 thing for RDS," you were just out of luck until now. Amazon RDS GP3 volumes give you the flexibility to provision storage performance independently of storage capacity, paying only for the resources you need. Every GP3 volume provides you with the ability to select from 20 gigabytes to 64 terabytes of storage capacity, with a baseline storage performance of 3,000 IOPS per second, including with the price of your storage. And then you can also pay for more, up to 64,000 IOPS for more performance, additional costs, which your RDS database might need. And price per gig is the same at 11 cents per gigabyte month, but the GP3 includes the 2 cents per IOPS month over the 3000 baseline, and a 0.08 per megabit second over the baseline of 125 megabits per second. So the higher performance comes at a higher price tag.
Yeah, but same, that already exists for the GP2 as well, right? So that higher price is, you're going to pay it no matter what. So I think you're paying a little less of a higher price, but probably for capacity you don't need. So it is IOPS.
I thought it was cheaper. Yeah.
No, GP3 is typically cheaper, but I don't know about once you start provisioning IOPS on top of the baseline, if it stays cheaper than GP2.
I have to imagine it stays cheaper than when you use provisioned IOPS on GP2, which was ridiculous, right?
Yeah. Like, can you make it more expensive? But it would be difficult. So,
yeah.
I wonder, like, I am more surprised about the length of time it took before they announced this, right? Like, what? Was there capacity on the back end? Was there, or is it part of their model where they were waiting for specific hardware to sort of depreciate before they moved? It'd be very interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. Not very interesting when I say it out loud.
No. Well, as far as the cloud pod goes, it's pretty interesting.
Yeah. Ooh, depreciation.
So exciting.
Yeah.
Finance terms.
Yeah.
It would be fun though to think. I mean, they do this all the time, right? They announce a new product that is better, faster, cheaper. Everybody should move to it. But then what do they do with all the old stuff? They got a plan, right?
I'm sure they have a strategy, and I'm sure it's very well thought through, and hopefully one day there'll be a white paper on it, because I don't have a strategy. I frequently have to make these choices anyway, and I don't care as much to spend as much time as they probably have.
The strategy is they find all these enterprise companies who don't make changes ever, and then they just sell them the old stuff, and then, you know, they never take advantage of the new stuff. That's the strategy. So
but they make the new stuff cheaper on purpose, right?
Mm-hmm. And then those companies say, well, I don't have time to performance test and regression test it and load test it, or it's not broken, I don't want to fix it. And so they just sit there paying more money because it's not worth the risk.
Yeah.
Speaking of risk, Amazon EKS is now supporting Kubernetes 1.24 for EKS and EKS distro. This release is dubbed Stargazer, which was named by the release team due to the numerous contributors. And the quote is, every single contributor is a star in our sky. And Amazon EKS extends its sincere thanks to the upstream community and the Kubernetes 1.24 release team for bringing this release to the greater cloud native ecosystem. And hold on, I need to go vomit real quickly. I appreciate the waxing poetic about it, but it's Kubernetes, guys. Come on. If you are curious what's in 1.24 for Kubernetes, Docker shim is finally dead. So if you haven't moved to Containerd yet, too late. You're now screwed. Detector for Docker socket is a new tool to help you identify where you're screwed, so you'll know at least, and identify anything that's using the Docker sock volume. Beta APIs are now turned off by default. Apparently, the beta APIs were turned on by default prior to this release. While this accelerated adoption of the beta features, it did cause massive amounts of pain and suffering for all those who tried to use them. So now, by default, those will be turned off for at least the new ones, but existing beta ones they previously turned on will remain on to make it even more confusing for you. And this will follow the same behavior of upstream 1.24.
Uh-oh.
There's new topology-aware hints, which is apparently common to deploy nodes and pods across AZ for HA. This can result in cross-AZ data transfer charges. And this new topology-aware hint allows you to avoid that by allowing you to identify through kubeproxy where containers should be placed to minimize your cross-AZ data transfer charges. PSP was deprecated in 1.21 and will completely removed in the next release, 1.25. But they are now fully have PSA, or the pod security admission, a built-in admission controller that implements the security controls outlined in the pod security standards, now available to you through many fun partners like OPA and many others. There's new simplified scaling of EKS managed node groups, which they apparently AWS contributed upstream, the Cluster Autoscaler project, to simplify the scaling of EKS managed node groups to and from zero nodes. So you can actually call and get what your node would look like, even if it's at zero, which is pretty nice for trying to figure out pod placement. And then kubelet serving certificates with unverifiable IP and DNS subject alternative names, or SANs, are automatically used with unverifiable SANs before 1.23. Now with 1.24, you have to get them verified or else they will not work, which may cause you issues in your pipeline. So you can be aware of that. And then the kubelet credential provider graduates to beta release, which apparently was not enabled by default. But if you want it, enable it. And this is available for you if you're using EKS anywhere, which supports kubelet support for image credential providers. So I don't know what that means, but there it is.
I mean, the certificate one is a nice add just because it's just a huge risk, you know, typically. And, you know, I think normally these are primarily used for authentication, you know, to make commands against a cluster. So maybe it's not the biggest deal. You're not actually serving traffic or data or application functionality with them. But, you know, yeah, it's just a arbitrary key at that point, I guess. So it's kind of nice to have that sort of verified. It's kind of cool.
Yeah, I mean,
The Docker shim thing, though, I'm curious if they previously released that tool to detect Docker socket, because it seems a little cruel to deploy it or release it as part of 1.24 and then also decommission the service.
I thought it was a little weird as well. I was like, wouldn't that have been good for like 1.23 or 1.22? But yeah, it doesn't sound like it, but I didn't do enough research.
Well, I think it's always interesting to keep tabs on how current EKS is. And so they just snuck in under the 6-month wire here for 1.24. Seems like that's about their pace, right?
Yeah, which, I mean, compared to when they were 18 months behind, I'll take 6 months. I actually don't know what the current version of Docker or Kubernetes even is these days. Does anyone know?
I don't know, 2.7 maybe? But
1.25 is the latest version.
Really? So
that's what it says. I'm on the website.
There you go.
It was released on November 9th, 2022. It was just released, 1.25.4. And then I guess 1.25 was the first one when that came out.
I mean, that's what, you know, Amazon said with EKS, right? Like they published an SLA for how fast to upgrade it, along with their sort of decree that they only maintain, what, three current versions, I think?
Yeah, three current versions and a 6-month lag to me is perfect for a managed service. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I mean, honestly, that's why I like EKS Autopilot, though, so I don't have to worry about any of that, because that's just a mess. Trying to keep Kubernetes up to date.
Yeah.
Have you been waiting months and months to hire your new AWS, GCP, or Azure architect, only to have them be poached at the 11th hour by a startup with a juice bar? Initiative stalled because you're having trouble hiring? Well, I have a simple solution. Foghorn Consulting. Foghorn Consulting provides top-notch cloud engineers to the world's most innovative companies and can be burning down your DevOps and cloud backlogs as soon as next week. Foghorn certified AWS, GCP, and Azure professionals are armed with infrastructure as code and from day one will be designing performant, optimized cloud-native or hybrid environments that deliver on the promise of cloud. Their FogOps solution even provides on-demand cloud engineering to augment your existing teams. Visit www.foghornconsulting.com or send an email to cloudtalentnow@foghornconsulting.com and tell them the CloudPod sent you. Your dedicated FogOps team is with you for the long haul, and they bring their own juice.
Well, if you are suffering through Windows containers on Amazon EKS, and I pity you, you can now use FluentBit container images for the Windows operating system. This eliminates the need for Windows customers to implement any custom logging solutions in their application code. But first, they have to implement logging or manage custom agents on their Windows nodes to scrape logs. So there you go. You now have the ability to route logs with FluentBit from your Windows.
From my 2 gig container.
Why would you enable logging?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Perfect.
We have a Windows event logs. What do you need logging for?
Yeah, wait. Sure. Amazon EC2 is announcing new price and capacity optimized allocation strategies for provisioning Amazon EC2 spot instances. And don't say that three times fast. So this basically new strategy allows you to optimize provisioning of spot instances via the EC2 auto scaling, EC2 fleet, and the spot fleet capability. The price and capacity optimized allocation strategy makes spot allocation decisions based on both spare capacity availability and spot instance price. The price and capacity optimized allocation strategy is the best choice for most spot applications such as big data, containerized workloads, CI/CD, web servers, image and media rendering, machine learning, and high performance computing. Until now, the lowest price and capacity optimized spot allocation strategies allowed you to optimize your spot instance placement for either the price of spot or the capacity availability, but not both. Now, the new price and capacity optimized allocation strategy looks at both price and capacity to select the spot instance pools that are least likely to be interrupted and have the lowest possible price for you. And this new strategy maintains an interruption rate comparable to the capacity optimized allocation strategy while keeping your price lower than before.
I like running my monitoring servers and my SIM servers on spot.
Your monitoring servers on spot?
And my SIM servers. I'm just kidding.
Living on the edge.
Living on the edge, yeah.
Now you're closer to that dream, right? Because now it's less likely to be interrupted due to spot market fluctuation. So, you know.
And capacity issues. So now you get the best of both worlds. So that's nice. I'm glad to see that.
I mean, as someone who had to implement this as a feature into, you know, a system built on or ECS, this was probably one of the biggest things I had to argue. Like, why'd you choose this one? Mm-hmm. And I flipped it halfway through because I got sick of arguing it. And then I argued it the other side.
No one could agree with you which one's better.
Yeah. Well, no, I mean, because I chose cost optimized initially and everyone accused me of being a cheapskate. So then I, you know, they're like, no, we got to keep the service up. So I went for compute optimized or capacity optimized and they got mad because I got interrupted.
And it got more expensive. Yep. Well, AWS Backup now supports restoring VMware backups to Amazon EC2. And all I can say is, clever girl, clever. This allows you to restore your VMware backups directly to EC2 as EC2 native instances. AWS Backup now restores to on-premise VMware, VMware Cloud on AWS Outposts, and VMware Cloud on AWS and EBS. AWS Backup also supports restoring virtual machines at the VM level or the disk level. I mean, hey, Amazon, I want to save a bunch of money and we're using VMware. And they're like, oh, hey, just back it up and restore it. And now you have EC2. Well done. Well done.
The only reason this isn't a reInvent announcement is because they don't want to piss off VMware.
Exactly.
Their partners. Yeah. Yes. This is huge.
It also restores to your VMware on-prem, right? So
technically it does, yes. But that's the virtual machine you took with VM, I think. Unless it takes EC2 to VM level, to VMware, that'd be interesting. But I don't see it.
Ooh, yeah. But I mean, this is cool because just getting the super flexibility around doing DR in the cloud, nobody wants, there's a lot of people who want to run their own data centers. Most of them don't want to run two, right? Mm-hmm. Most of them don't want to run one just for pure DR. So anything you can do to make DR in the cloud, just set it and forget it, is awesome.
I mean, I'm still on the, I don't want to run any data center cloud family, but you know, whatever. If you want to run one, sure.
Yeah.
Right. Yes. Not everyone. Some people.
All right, let's move to GCP, who's announcing Private Marketplace now in preview. And for those of you who said Private Marketplace, that's familiar to me. It's because AWS has had it for 4 years.
A long time, yeah.
A long time now. Google Cloud Marketplace is home to a wide variety of useful products, allegedly, for organizations in all industries. When faced with so many products, though, an employee might deploy an incompatible product version by accident or not know that your organization has a preferred product for the use case in mind. To avoid this issue, Google is announcing Private Marketplace in preview. The new Private Marketplace feature allows IT and cloud administrators to create a private, curated version of Google Cloud Marketplace that's accessible to employees within their organization. Key features include curate product collections for your org, prevent redundant products, and reduce shadow IT.
Yeah, I don't know. Reduction of shadow IT comes from actually providing services so that your engineers and employees don't go looking for their own solutions to things. Yep. Private Marketplace.
Not just trying to turn everything else off. That's not the answer.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I get it as an announcement, and from a, you know, from an IT perspective, you want to have some sort of control in your environment, and this is, you know, this is a pretty good compromise, but my experience with this is it's never maintained, and
that's the trouble.
You're always just chasing down someone. Yeah.
Yeah, but if it is maintained, it is pretty cool though to separate the wheat from the chaff for organizations when there's 10 things you use and then there's 100 things with names that are almost exactly the same, and then everyone's accidentally running the wrong thing.
Yeah. Oh, and if you can't figure out how to do a service catalog, this is sort of a poor man's service catalog.
Yeah, totally.
Google Public Sector announces continuity of operations offering for government entities under cyber attack. And this is for workspaces in particular. Cyber attacks that target the government are all too common these days, from SolarWinds to hacks against widely used email servers to attacks against industrial bases. Google knows that attacks continue against the public and private sectors. Given the external environment, government agencies in particular need reliable continuity plans in the event of an attack. In fact, two policy directives were recently issued to ensure that government entities can continue to operate. The first is the President Policy Directive 40, which advocates that critical services are sustained in the event of emergency, such as natural disaster, a pandemic like COVID, or major cybersecurity or ransomware attacks. Every U.S. government agency is expected to have a continuity of operations plan, or COOP, in place, and Google Workspace is postured to help government organizations for its business and collaboration continuity needs, ensuring agency teams continue to work effectively and securely in the event of an attack, including having critical productivity tools like email storage and document sharing and more. And I left this here because it is a Workspace story. But can they bring this to Google Cloud? That'd be kind of cool. Like, your Google Cloud's going to continue to run in the event of a cyber attack. That's what I really want.
Well, right. But if you look through this press release...
Is it not going to run?
It's just the only thing that they've actually announced in this press release is that they're holding a workshop that, you know, if you work for a government agency, will help you set up Workspace.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
This doesn't provide any new service or functionality. Like, I hated everything about this. I'm like, oh, cool. Is it going to be, you know, tailored specifically for someone in the... No. Is it going to have any special connective? No. Is it... Okay. It's just the normal Workspace
product. It's a normal Workspace product, yeah. But and, hey, if you're a government guy who's trying to figure out how to meet President Policy Directive 40 and you Google for it, this will show up in the search results and now you'll know there's a workshop that you missed 6 years ago.
Perfect.
All right. Moving right on to Azure. I didn't have a lot for Google. Sorry.
Yeah.
Mark Rusinovich, CTO and technical fellow at Microsoft Azure, is back with a blog post about Project Flash, which was introduced in a previous reliability blog series and talked about on this very show. The goal of Flash was to monitor VM availability in a robust and comprehensive manner, and now with their efforts coming to fruition, they're now sharing you some updates. First is the GA of VM availability information and Azure resource graph for efficient and at scale monitoring convenient for detailed downtime investigations and impact assessments. Preview of VM availability metrics in Azure Monitor for quick debugging is now publicly available with trend analysis of VM availability over time and setting up threshold-based alerts on scenarios that impact workload performance and preview of VM availability status change events via Azure Event Grid. Now, that all sounded really, really boring. And if you click on the actual article that's in our show notes, you will find screenshots of all these capabilities. And all I can say is, ooh, graphs. lots of them.
I don't get the graphs. I don't know if it's what's going on here, but I'm getting a lot of really bad JSON events.
Yeah. Okay, so if you hear Project Flash and you listen to this description, which one do you think of first? The Flash or Flash Gordon?
I went Queen Flash. Oh, immediately. It just played in my head.
I went to the comic book Flash character, so I'm not as
there you go.
Not as cultured as Ryan and the Queen.
I went Flash Gordon for sure.
Well, I mean, technically it was a song for the Flash movie, so I think it counts.
I think it counts, yeah. apparently marketplaces are popular this week because Microsoft hosted their first ever marketplace summit and gave every independent software vendor and SaaS provider a virtual front row seat to learn how to maximize marketplace opportunity and do more with less. Oh, Microsoft, please kill that. Especially...
That should have been a show title. That should have been a show title.
We all missed Thought it.
Pod gives everyone a virtual front row seat.
To do more with less, yes. That's what they're doing at Twitter for sure. They're doing a lot more with less.
Yeah, a lot less.
To help ISVs capitalize on SaaS opportunities, they're excited to announce the ISV Success Program is now generally available and public preview. And much like our earlier Google article, it's really nothing, but we're going to put the rest of these up anyways. The IVS Success Program is dedicated to offering support across the application growth cycle from building on Microsoft Cloud, publishing to Marketplace, and growing through go-to-market channels. Public preview marks the consolidation of Marketplace rewards into the ISV Success Program. This creates a single, easy-to-use benefit offering that houses within the Microsoft Cloud Partner Program to support ISV and SaaS providers across the app lifecycle. With Marketplace rewards, ISVs get listing optimization, best-in-class marketing support, and additional cloud credits based on sales. So as I read that is, the more people spend on your marketplace offering, the higher we're going to rank it in the list. Mm-hmm. ISV Success Program benefits include Azure credits, GitHub Enterprise Cloud Seats, Virtual Studio subscriptions, Azure support, 365 E5 dev licenses, Dynamics 365 dev sandboxes, and consulting for app architecture design, review, publishing, and marketplace listing optimizations. Everyone loves a good SEO for your marketplace listing.
Oh yeah, I wonder if they announce all these things in this like time frame, just because this a lot of companies are securing budget for the following year, or right around now. Pencil this in.
there was another announcement that I was reading from them about. It's basically a supply chain management console, and it's like a dashboard for Dynamics 365, and we don't cover Dynamics, but it's similar. I was like, you're announcing this right now, so people will allocate budget to this because supply chain is important and people want solutions. Well, if you have read anything about Microsoft lately, you'll know that they have taken their commitment to creating a safe, inclusive work environment for all employees very seriously. And in keeping with that commitment, they are announcing new steps to prevent discrimination and harassment following a 2021 proposal that was approved by the Microsoft shareholders. Based on the proposal, the Microsoft Board of Directors engaged a law firm to conduct an independent review of the company's sexual harassment and gender discrimination policies and practices, and that work has been completed and is available to read, topping out at 50 pages. It's a lot. And based on the report, the board has created an implementation plan, including comprehensive policy reviews, revisions, broadened awareness, blah, 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 blah. A lot of boring things, but ultimately they're trying to be better and I applaud them for that. That's why we talked about it. So congratulations to them, but I won't bore you anymore with this talk because it's very long and lengthy legalese that no one cares about. And again, we didn't have any stories this week. So again, I did the best I could.
What about Oracle? What'd you come up with for Oracle?
There was a big goose egg on the Oracle side, but there's a lightning round for the things that I didn't.
What about IBM? IBM Cloud, nothing.
We don't want to cover IBM. We don't. Yeah. They'd have to pay me. I think IBM could pay us to cover their cloud. Sure.
Yeah, that's a great idea.
Yeah, they could pay us. That'd be fine.
you can email info@thecloudpod.net
for sponsorship opportunities. All right, let's do the lightning round.
All right, Amazon S3 Glacier improves restore throughput by up to 10 times when retrieving large volumes of archive data.
Someone needs to juice their profitability numbers 10 times faster.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
I mean, they don't call it a glacier pace for nothing. What do you want?
Ooh, nice. Amazon RDS for SQL Server now supports a linked server to Oracle. Ooh, Oracle.
I mean, like, this is like that. I really don't want to sit next to this guy at the bus, but I have to. And like, we had to talk to each other and like, we had to do a project. Like, ugh, like, why? Ugh.
Is this like the turducken of databases?
Ooh, yes, nice. Nicely done.
Regarding the bus comment, if you were on the Dirty 30 on your way to our old office, you would be getting peed on.
Mm, lovely.
Yeah. Excellent.
Maybe shanked. Okay, Amazon RDS for Oracle now supports Amazon Elastic File System integration.
I mean, it's a trifecta. You have Oracle support for EFS, Zed, and Awk, and now you've got the classic Linux things all together.
What more could you need?
What more could you need?
Mm-hmm. AWS Secrets Manager increases the API request per second limits. Ooh.
This is clearly written by someone who had a Lambda function that went a little too crazy and needed help.
I don't know. It might just be AWS Secrets Manager trying to increase their profitability.
It could be that too.
Because each request
usually when they have a limit, though, it's because they don't charge for API calls. It would be so much easier if they just charged for API calls, and then you could.
Oh, they charge you for Secrets Manager API calls.
Oh, do they?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, they do. Oh, yeah.
Very much they do.
Well, then why do they have any limits? Yeah, no limits. No limits.
They don't want you to spend money too quickly without you knowing. That's the problem.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Because then they just have to give it back to you.
No, I want that. Okay. We got three general availability announcements for Azure coming rapid fire. You ready? Multivariate anomaly detection.
My mind goes right to Loki and
yep.
You know, the variant police. So yeah, okay, variants. Got it. Check. More time lords. That's
But that's multivariate. I just increased my vocabulary today. I didn't know multivariate is a term.
Oh, I didn't get that either.
Multivariate.
Yeah.
All I know is that's an anomaly in their spelling. So,
all right, let's move on to retryable writes in Azure Cosmos DB for MongoDB.
Oh, I'm going to have to eliminate Cosmos DB from my Mongo evaluation then because they don't lose data. Damn it.
Yeah, well, I mean, if you're lucky, you'll get duplicative writes. Those are always good.
If I'm really lucky, yeah.
Yeah.
Write up to once, read many. Maybe zero. Static web app support for preview environments in Azure DevOps.
I mean, look, if you need DevOps for a static web app, I'm sorry for you.
I don't know. Like, if I think about, well, I guess it's DevOps is what they rebranded TFS, right? Never mind.
Well, I mean,
I don't know what this is.
Yeah, it's a bunch of things. Yeah.
I mean, I like pipelines for anything. I think you should always do a deployment pipelines that you should version, should be able to roll back the whole thing. Your static site is no exception. So if it still does that, and I'm pretty sure it does, but I'm not an Azure user.
Like, we have one left. I'm going to tell you right now, Turducken has it. So Justin, this is your last chance. Otherwise, it's going to be a tie.
I mean, it's on theme. It's yeah.
Amazon EventBridge launches new scheduler.
I mean, I didn't know I had a scheduler to begin with, so glad it has a new one. I guess.
Yeah, that was a good try. I guess that tells
I'm not saying anything because I know
yeah,
I,
don't,
I
make don't some get bad a negative jokes. Point.
I can lose a point.
You could lose a point. All right, that's it.
That is it.
Turducken takes it. Turducken. I had a turducken.
I've never had one.
Wow.
At Christmas, that's in some tiny little beach town north of Sydney when I got invited to stay was with a friend of a friend for Christmas, and they brought a real turducken.
Wow. Did you mark him at 7? He's the only one behind me. Or did you?
I never do the marking. I just talk, and then other people do things.
Oh, so he's tied. You're tied. Congratulations. Yeah, tied. Nice.
Wow.
Feel challenged. It has been a rough month, though. I feel like I've really been off my game.
The crazy thing is, Ryan used to finish the year with like 2 points.
Mm-hmm. He's come back. He's learned. I mean, he was a later host of the show, so it took him longer to ramp up. But now that he's ramped, he's crushing it, man.
Yeah. So he's at.
Yeah. And he's like he's mastered all the ways to like make you fall for the nostalgia trap. Like he's got it all down. Like he's done a great job, really locking this down.
It's not a complicated formula inside my brain.
Indeed. Well, the only thing coming up is a reInvent. So that's next week. But if you're listening to the show, so if you're not going now, because I think it's probably not able to be sold anymore. But enjoy if you're going, and again, look for Peter. And if you're not going, enjoy and join us on our live stream and listen to us make fun of things live. And you know, Ryan can use his newfound lightning round skills to make that humorous. So that'd be good.
No, oh no, I'm sorry in advance.
All right. Well, have a great week. Talk to you later.
Good night.
Bye, everybody.
And that is The Week in Cloud. We'd like to thank our sponsor, Foghorn Consulting. Subscribe on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts and tweet us your feedback at #TheCloudPod. Or join our Slack channel, go to our website, thecloudpod.net, for sign-up instructions.